The Athletic.
So not even the transfer window closing could stop Chelsea's new owners from shopping. On yesterday's pod, we revealed that RB Leipzig's Christopher Nkunku has signed a pre-contract agreement to join Chelsea next season. Today, we take a closer look at the player they'll be getting.
Christopher Nkunku! Un bijou de but!
Comes it on Nkunku with a hat-trick chance, which he takes. 4-3, the young French player who has had a starring role here tonight.
Has actually signed, as we understand it, a pre-contract agreement to join Chelsea.
And now the defence is sliced open, it's Nkunku! Nkunku to open the scoring for Leipzig!
You might say that Chelsea have been a bit of a graveyard for talent in recent years. We haven't really seen players necessarily develop that much. I think a lot of it has to do with the instability.
Our German football expert Raphael Honigstein and Chelsea correspondent Liam Toomey are here as we explore what Nkunku would bring to the bridge, the knock-on effect of his arrival, and if his impact coming from the Bundesliga will be more Erling Haaland or Timo Werner. I'm Mark Chapman. This is the Athletic Football Podcast. Well, Raf, you've been watching Nkunku develop in the Bundesliga. He is still only 24 years old. How big a talent are we talking about here right now?
Amazing talent. I think he's gone beyond the talent bracket and into real fantastic player. Best player in the Bundesliga not named Erling Haaland and Robert Lewandowski the last couple of years. Hugely versatile, can play in a number of positions. The one caveat I would add is that I don't think he can lead the line. I don't think that's his best position. I think he's better coming off from a wide area or from a number 10 position. So as good a signing as he will be, I think, for Chelsea, if this does go through, I still think they need somebody else alongside him to bring out the best of him.
Okay, so is he better in a three then, or are you saying he could be in a he could play in a 10 with somebody ahead of him?
Yeah, he could be doing either. As a general rule of thumb, I think forwards, like centre backs, always like to have safety numbers. So if you have three strikers, I think it's easier. If you have two strikers, it's easier than one. I don't think he would be best utilised with his back to goal, trying to hold up balls or trying to link up in deep positions too far away from the opposition box. Maybe he will develop that side of his game, but he is a very explosive player, likes to dribble, likes to cut inside, and I think he will be really good signing for Chelsea. Really, really good signing.
His stats are spectacular. Breakthrough season, in inverted commas, a year ago, 20 goals in 34 appearances, 13 assists, 11 goals in 12 matches in Europe. He's got 6 in 8 already this season. You've just touched on some of his attributes, but the player behind the numbers is what you said, I think, there, explosive.
Yeah, hugely explosive, very fast. There's some wonderful YouTube compilations of the kind of trickery that is sometimes involved in him getting past players. He does some really special things, but he does also does the really simple things really well. You know, always has an eye out for a teammate. It doesn't shoot from stupid angles, doesn't do silly stuff when things don't go according to plan. Super professional on the pitch. Super nice guy, by all accounts. Everyone I've spoken to at Leipzig says they enjoy working with him. And yeah, the only question for a couple of years now has been, where will he go next? And I think for Chelsea to pull that off is a real coup, especially if they manage to do it so early before a real auction starts. I think there's a good chance we will see him have an impact for France as well, unless France self-destruct early on. but I can see him coming on in games. I can see him stretch teams. I can see him do a lot of special stuff. And of course, then we would have seen an auction in the spring at the latest for his talents. If Chelsea managed to get this over the line, now, then I think the little bit of extra they'll probably have to pay on top of what would otherwise been deemed an agreeable price to release him will be seen as worth it.
Okay. Should we already book in the Why Have France Imploded pod for midway through the World Cup, shall we? Should we do that just on the off chance? I mean, it's always 50-50, isn't it?
It's 50-50 for them to either win the competition or get knocked out in the group stage.
Yeah. Okay, right. So at the end of the group stage, I'll book in the How Have France Imploded and Why, and then we'll also book in the
How They Won the World Cup
pod. Brilliant. They're two pods sorted for our World Cup coverage. Liam, on the before we look at his what his potential impact at Chelsea may be, where he might play, whose places are under threat, talk me through how this deal has come about from your perspective. And Raf may have information from Germany to throw into this, but go for it.
Yes, I think Raf and David Ornstein have very much led our reporting on this, but Nkunku is someone that Chelsea have been looking at for quite some time. I think he's someone that the recruitment staff have been watching since before the change of ownership. But we've seen Chelsea's new owners be very aggressive in pursuing the players that their data suggests are elite performers. And Nkunku certainly fits that bracket. In terms of his age profile, 24 years old, heading into what you would think would be his prime years, he fits the sort of good investment model as well, and someone that I think Chelsea feel, as Raf said, that if they allow this to progress and get closer to next summer, may well go up in price, even though, as we've said, he has a defined price to get him out of RB Leipzig.
Is this one of the first deals that it feels to you like pre-Boehly and now with Boehly everybody's aligned?
I'm not sure, because there are so few people left from what happened before. I mean, the chief scout has gone, of course. Thomas Tuchel has gone. The football structure above Tuchel went ages ago. So we are very much talking about decisions that I think Chelsea's new owners are making off their own back, really. And the interesting part of this is that, you know, it was one thing spending so aggressively last summer when you felt like you had to, the Chelsea squad needed significant surgery. It's another thing to now line up transfers for future windows when you still don't have a sporting director in place. Hmm. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic, and I wonder how it affects Chelsea's pursuit of a sporting director. But I think this is certainly an alignment of someone that Chelsea have looked at for quite a long time, and someone that the new owners have decided should be a priority.
And Graham Potter's role in this?
Well, I don't think he's taking a sort of leading role. I mean, he has Kyle McCauley, the recruitment analyst that he's brought with him. I think McCauley's role is to give Potter's opinion, essentially, on players. So I'm sure he will have been asked for his opinion on Nkunku. The new owners want to be collaborative. That was a big part of why they appointed Potter and why they felt they couldn't work with Tuchel. So I'm sure, even if he doesn't admit it in a press conference, Potter has been at least asked about Nkunku and what he thinks of him and how he might fit into his team. But ultimately, I think Chelsea's owners are looking at this as a talent play and as a good investment in someone who could be about to explode at the highest level.
How does the deal work as far as you understand it, Raf?
Well, I don't have the total picture, because it has been clouded a little bit in denials and obfuscations from various sources. But basically, when Nkunku renewed his contract in the summer, there was a clause inserted that allowed him to go for a certain amount of money. That amount of money, according to what I've been told, is not fixed in itself, but there's a mechanism to do with performances, etc., that then defines the value objectively, and you can sort of work your way back from it now, thinking, okay, what will the price probably be? And what Chelsea have done or trying to do is to say, we will do the deal now and make sure that Leipzig give the player to us. And that way we don't have to sit and wait until somebody else will come and maybe trigger the same mechanism. Of course, the number one, the most important step is to win over the player. The reason why I think we've heard these reports is because it is effectively a situation where the player can control his own destiny, and Leipzig are not stupid enough to pretend that no one's talking to him and this is all an outrage and tapping up and all sort of stuff. They understand how the business works, and they knew that this was going to come. Perhaps what they weren't prepared for is for the story to come out so early, which of course is not ideal with still a big chunk of the season to go. My guess is that with the World Cup approaching, maybe we will see some clarity before the World Cup. I think that would be a good moment if indeed an agreement can be reached between the three parties, because then there's a massive gap until German football comes back in January. So that's where we are. We've seen with Chelsea in the summer that some of the deals where they fought, they are basically done or they're very close. They can still fall apart. So we should caution that until everything is signed, we cannot quite be sure. Players can change their mind as well, but the indications are that this will go through. And it's quite astonishing, really, if you consider the fact that at the end of August, this medical went through and we were just in September and we're talking about a deal that will happen in June of next year, even allowing for sort of the Naby Keita precedent, that still is a lot of forward thinking and quite impressive, I think, if Chelsea can make this happen.
And presumably, Liam, I mean, we talked about them paying more than the release clause, but Raf's explanation there on the different mechanisms probably indicate that it's a bit more complicated than a simple release clause. And also, the second point Raf made, they've been in this situation before, Chelsea, this summer with players, and maybe by paying more, they try and minimise their risk of being usurped.
Yeah, and maybe hope desperately that Barcelona don't hear about this. The new owner's got a crash course in how the European football transfer market works over the summer. Added to that, the unique situation at Barcelona that burned them a couple of times. So I think that's why you haven't seen Chelsea crowing about this. You haven't really seen even anything off the record coming from that side that they are absolutely confident this is 100% done. I think the messaging is that there's a confidence now that a full agreement can be reached and that they have kind of the framework in place of what they want to do. And it certainly seems like the player is on board with that. But there's so much time until next summer and so much can change. I mean, Nkunku could get a really bad injury. You know, that's just one of the many variables that could change everything. So what is interesting is that the transfer window is closed and that Chelsea's owners are still working very, very actively to strengthen this squad for future windows. As I said before, they've even hired a sporting director who you would expect to lead this kind of conversation.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a handbrake off.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone, host of Handbrake Off, the twice-weekly Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic each week. I'm joined by two of Amy Lawrence, Adrian Clark, Art de Roche and James McNicholas. What a lineup that is, to talk about the best club in the Premier League. This week, join us to bask in the North London Derby glory. And let me tell you, do we bask? Yes, we do. Come back later in the week on Friday as we look ahead to another massive tussle with Liverpool and look to keep the number one firmly by our name. Search for Handbrake Off now, available wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, if you could hit follow to make sure you keep up with the best team, that's us, covering the best team. That is Handbrake Off. So good, we made it twice.
Raph talks about, you know, how great the player is, what a great deal Chelsea might have managed to pull off here. Where's he going to play?
Well, Raph's watched him a lot more at RB Leipzig than I have, but if my understanding is correct, they've often played with a sort of back three and either a front three or a sort of a 10 and sort of split strikers in recent years. And Nkunku has played in both systems and played very well in both systems, kind of off a more conventional number nine. And I think Chelsea is set up to let him do that as well, given the way that Graham Potter has started. I know they played a back four against Crystal Palace, but Potter is tactically quite similar to Thomas Tuchel in terms of the sort of stable of starting formations that he will pick from with this group of players. And I think whether it's a three or a two, Nkunku will rarely find himself in a situation where he is leading the line for Chelsea and expected to hold the ball up and win fight balls against much bigger centre-backs. I don't think that will be the plan. Whether it's Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang next to him or Kai Havertz playing as kind of a false nine that can do more of the physical things, there will always be someone with him who can kind of let him settle into what is more of his stronger role.
It'd be very interesting if Chelsea and Potter think they still need that number nine.
Yeah.
Now that the pendulum has swung back towards number nines, and I think there might be one or two in the Premier League who are sort of reinvigorating their position at the moment. Mm. But I think Nkunku, as Liam has said, will find a place in whatever formation. The one thing that I wouldn't like to see him in personally is to be that number nine. I think you wouldn't do him any favours. So that's going to be, I think, still up for debate. You know, is this it now in terms of the strike force, or are they saying, well, Nkunku is basically the guy who will dictate how a new strike force will look? That might not include Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and not too many of the other players at the moment. There's, I think, a lot of question marks about the forward players right now at Chelsea, which I think makes it all the more important that they really strengthen with quality players like Nkunku.
And because immediately there are going to be questions, aren't there, Liam? Because you think, okay, well, let's say he's one of the wide in a three a little bit. So you go Nkunku and Sterling, and for the argument's sake at the moment, it's Aubameyang. So then what happens to Mason Mount, for example, or where's Kai Havertz in that? I mean, Chelsea's actual big number nine is on loan at Inter Milan, isn't he? I mean, isn't he? I mean, that comes to an end at the end of this summer. So whilst his signing will be positive and lauded, there will be players within that Chelsea squad whose places are going to be threatened. I mean, I know that's the case with every new signing, but I think with the plethora of attacking players that Chelsea has, it's really interesting.
Yeah, and I think in that sense, it's a continuation of the summer where we saw so many new faces coming in across all positions, that it was quite destabilising for the squad, because you had some players that were looking to leave but couldn't find a market, and some players that wanted to play for Chelsea but suddenly found themselves with their positions threatened by new signings. I think that will continue. No one in Chelsea's current sort of attacking stable has really nailed down a starting spot, with the exception of Mason Mount, I think you would say, who plays regularly regardless of who the coach is, but he doesn't always play in the attacking line. Potter's already played him as more of a number eight, which is where I understand, you know, Mount sees his best position, as kind of that sort of number eight, number 10 hybrid. So I think a lot will depend on the way Chelsea set up, but their conventional attackers, I think Raheem Sterling started well and been reasonably reliable, but no one else has really nailed down a place yet. So I think what we're seeing is Chelsea not being beholden to what they've got in terms of what they're planning with their attack. And as you rightly say, the Lukaku question hovers over all of this, because while Tuchel was there, there was absolutely no question that he would even consider coming back. But now, such an investment in him, is that a sunk cost? Is that considered a sunk cost by Todd Boehly and Clear Lake Capital, or is there a way back for him? Does Graham Potter see that? There are a lot of things that we don't know yet, and that will have ripple effects for Nkunku and the others.
Could Nkunku be the Martinez at Inter Milan to Lukaku, Raf, on what you've seen?
Yes, he could be. Very similar player in terms of the impact I think he can have in that position as a second striker. But I just don't see Lukaku coming back, irrespective of who's behind him. I mean, you never really know in football, but I can't see right now, after everything that's gone down and Chelsea's willingness to let him go on such attractive terms for Inter, that he will come back. But yeah, if you ask Lukaku, do you see yourself playing ahead of a two with Nkunku making a lot of the runs and linking up with you and helping you to find a bit more mobility as well, then I'm sure he'd be very happy. I just don't think he wants to do it in a Chelsea shirt necessarily.
We talked about the article that Liam has put together on the potential impact of Nkunku at Chelsea. He put that together with Liam Tharm, who's our tactics writer. So we asked the other Liam for his thoughts as well.
The big consideration tactically is probably the difference in terms of style between the teams and the leagues. Red Bull football in particular is a lot more transitional and vertical. Potter likes to play in a lot more organised possession and with a lot less chaos, if we're being totally honest. I think the most exciting part about Nkunku is the fact he's so two-footed. He can score and create with both feet. He scores plenty of goals from attacking crosses, either through positioning himself well in the box or through nice late runs to attack crosses. But I think his best goals come from those runs in behind.
And Christopher Nkunku has done just that. One of Europe's most sought-after strikers has got the goal.
When he times it to get in behind the defence, he shows really good composure, often dinking it over the goalkeeper. And he's really composed, has really good balance, really ends up on the floor when he is scoring goals. I think an underrated and maybe ignored aspect of his game too is the fact that he can offer a dead ball threat. He scored the goals from direct free kicks, and he scored 7 of his 8 senior penalties. I know Chelsea have Jorginho, but it never hurts to have options and depth, I think, in that regard. Ultimately, he's still only 24, and Potter has got a record of developing young talent, so I think it's a real good fit for Christopher Nkunku.
Just to follow up on Liam's point there, Raf, bearing in mind we've also looked at players who might be under threat from Nkunku's arrival. We mentioned Havertz. We didn't really mention Pulisic, but you'd expect Pulisic to be under threat. And also Timo Werner has been mentioned in this podcast as well. Is there any kind of... There has to be a small question mark about how quickly he will adapt from the Bundesliga to the Premier League.
I think there's always a question about that adaptation, whatever league you come from. Even if you move within the league, I don't think that it necessarily always goes immediately when you change the system. It is true that because of the Bundesliga's very open nature and the amount of goals that get scored there, I think centre forwards or strikers or forwards in of any description often find a bit more space. I think it'd be naive to deny that. But from that doesn't necessarily follow that players who are very, very good will suddenly be not very, very good when they move. I think we've seen that reductive take being smashed to pieces by a couple of strikers who moved.
Do you know what? Do you know what? Even as I was asking the question, I was thinking I could easily make the opposite case with a couple of very, very good examples, really.
Yeah, but it's, I think it's obvious that when players move and it doesn't work out, then people look for reasons. And the easiest thing to say is, well, you know, Bundesliga is easier. Or I think having seen him play and the consistency that he's shown, I don't see any reason to worry that he wouldn't be a success in any system, in any league. Of course, you might say that Chelsea have been a bit of a graveyard for talent in recent years. We haven't really seen players necessarily develop that much. I think a lot of it has to do with the instability that's been both behind the scenes and on the managerial position. You wouldn't want to, somebody to come in a system that perhaps doesn't quite bring the best out of players, or, you know, there's a schism evolving between what the club wants to do and what the manager wants to do. So you have all these vagaries and unknowns in football. So you can never quite, I think, predict which way it's going to go. But I think in terms of his qualities, his attributes, I would say that they're universally strong enough to thrive under almost any circumstances. So I have very little doubt that he's going to be a success.
Just moving away from this transfer and a couple on Chelsea, Liam, to finish with, tomorrow night, we're recording this on Tuesday, the Wednesday night game at home to Inter Milan is huge for Chelsea, given how they've begun the group stages. Feels big for Potter as well, actually.
It's massive. It's the biggest test that Potter's had so far, but it's no margin for error for Chelsea at this point. They're in a terrible situation after 1 point from two games against Dinamo Zagreb and Salzburg. And this almost feels like a Champions League knockout tie, because they have Milan at home and then Milan away, separated by about a week. And I think if they lose the game, then they're in serious trouble. If they draw it, then you can kiss goodbye to finishing top of Group E. They're very much playing for second. But either way, they have some serious ground to make up. And I think the only sort of saving grace from what's happened so far is that both Dinamo Zagreb and RB Salzburg have looked dangerous enough that you could imagine them potentially taking points off Milan, really opening things up, and of course taking points off each other to keep this group open. But it's a big, big test for Potter. The team he picks will be fascinating. The way he sets up to try and nullify a very confident Milan team that are coming to Stamford Bridge as Serie A champions in good form, with a player in Rafael Leao that Chelsea admire greatly. His one-on-one tussle with Reece James will be absolutely fascinating, I think. And then, of course, you have the narrative of Fikayo Tomori and Olivier Giroud coming back to Chelsea as well, and both will be very, very keen to have a good night.
Mind you, RB Leipzig have had a tough start as well, haven't they, to their Champions League group, RAF. So, and they play on Wednesday at home to Celtic. That's the earlier kickoff in case Chelsea fans want to watch that game for obvious reasons.
Yeah, they should watch, because I think it'd be an exciting game. Leipzig, 0 points so far. A little bit unlucky against Real Madrid, but awful against Shakhtar. That was the last game before Domenico Tedesco was fired. Now under Marco Rosa, they found a bit more momentum, I would say. They scored 4 against Bochum, which admittedly is the worst team in the Bundesliga, but Nkunku scoring 2, Werner scoring 2, striking up a bit of a relationship that they had before Werner left. So, yeah, I think it'd be an interesting game for Chelsea fans for all sorts of reasons. So they should...
Right, thank you both. Talk to you both soon. Liam Toomey and Rafa Honigstein. Now for Unrivaled Champions League coverage and so much more as well, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months at theathletic.com/footballpod. Now, the other big story of the day is the uncertainty around Steve Cooper's position at Nottingham Forest. At the time of recording this, he is still in the job. If anything happens, we will cover it on other pods this week, and we'll have another episode for you. That might be the episode at the same time tomorrow. Hit subscribe. I'll see you then. The Athletic.